Are you listening to us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or any other platform where you can leave a rate or review? Do you like what we're doing? If the answer to all of that is yes, please consider quickly giving us a 5-star rate. And if you wouldn't mind leaving us a nice review, we greatly appreciate that as well. Okay, let's do this.
Hello, welcome to the Ghost of Harrenhal. My name's Simon.
And I'm McKelly.
Thank you for joining us for episode 98 of our chapter-by-chapter book review of A Song of Ice and Fire by George Martin. Today we'll be discussing chapter 24 of Clash of Kings, that's Theon 2.
And for the 98th time, we're going to chat about the chapter and try not to spoil any future plot points for you. And hopefully we're going to provide you with some entertainment while we do it.
Our 98th time, there might be a new listener, you know.
That's true.
We'll summarize what happened, discuss our thoughts on it, provide some useful background, compare it to the TV show, indulge in a little pedantry, and cover some reader mail. Be sure to check out our show notes. They'll provide you with some interesting additional information, which will be particularly useful if you want to know how to spell the names and places we talk about. Because we don't spell them on the TV show. On the TV show. On the podcast.
Maybe we'll graduate to a TV show someday.
Exactly. I think that will happen. How are you, McKelly?
I'm doing well. I'm a bit tired, but otherwise doing well.
I'm a bit tired. I played 2 games of soccer on Monday, which is 2 days ago now, and I'm still exhausted. I played 2 games of soccer like a young man, and then I woke up the next morning and I remembered that I'm not.
Well, I bet you fooled them out on the soccer field.
I bet they thought for the first game, not the second game. Why are you tired, sir?
Because Molly's swim practices start at 5 a.m., so I have to be up just after 4 a.m. to get there.
And when
can
children drive in this country?
16. So got another year before she can do this herself. Mm-hmm. I'm counting down the days, trust me. Yesterday, she had 5 a.m., so 5 to 7 a.m. practice, then a 3 to 5 p.m. practice, and then a summer swim league swim meet that started at 6.
Isn't she tired?
Yes. Oh, she was beat. She was zombified by the time we were driving home. She shouldn't have gone to that second practice. She really should have skipped it, but hindsight being what it is, she went.
Well, you've basically lost me for about a month now because the European Soccer Championships are on.
That's right, yes.
I have very little going on in my life apart from those. But.
Anyway. Well, we've got quite a long chapter, I believe.
Yeah, we do. So let's get down to business. Where was Theon last we heard of him? Last we saw of Theon, he'd arrived at his father's place in Pyke in the Iron Islands to a less than rapturous reception. He was treated as an outsider, not as the heir apparent. His loyalties are openly questioned, and his plan for the Iron Islands to join with Robb in defeating the Lannisters had been bluntly rejected. And Kelly, why don't we give him the summary of this one?
Let's see if Theon's bounced back from that brutal reintroduction to the Iron Islands. So Theon's back in Lordsport, admiring his soon-to-be-launched longship. She looks great. As does the striking woman on the docks. Her name is Esgrid, and she's the pregnant wife of Sigrun, the shipbuilder. He tells her that she's wasted on Sigrun, and she reposts that Sigrun thinks the ship is wasted on Theon. Theon likes her bold spirit, and doesn't see her marital status or pregnancy as obstacles in wooing her. In fact, tells her that this saves him the worry of siring a bastard princeling.
Theon describes the ship as a fair maiden, but Esgrid bridles and says that she's more of a sea bitch. Theon loves this, and the name is fixed. His uncle Aeron, Damphair, will perform the launching and naming ritual the next day. Theon invites Esgrid to attend a feast at Pyke that evening. Esgrid agrees, and they walk back to the town of Lordsport to get Theon's horse and squire. She asks if Theon has a crew. He doesn't. So as they pass various men, she points out their strengths and weaknesses. Theon again realizes how long he's been gone.
They find his squire Wex and Theon's new horse Smiler. Theon's mainland upbringing has made him a better horseman than his countrymen, and he bought the fearsome Smiler from Sawain Botley for a bargain price, as the older man couldn't handle the beast. They ride to Pike together, they being Escrid and Theon, and Theon repeatedly fondles Escrid. She firmly removes his hand each time, and she asks how she'll be received at the feast. Theon reckons that it won't be much worse than he's been received.
He's got a point. She asks whether he is truly the heir. He has an older sister and uncles. He's not worried about Asha. He'll marry her off. But his uncles are a problem. They are powerful and respected, with loyal men of their own. Euron, the eldest, is possibly dead, having been at sea for more than 2 years. Victarion is hard-working but not very imaginative, and Aeron now only cares for religion. Escrid says that even if Euron comes back, he'd not be welcomed as the new lord, but being by this time half a stranger. This, of course, doesn't help Theon, since he's far more of a stranger than his uncle.
Yep. When they arrive at Pike, the stable boy treats Escrid with deference, and it turns out that she is in fact Theon's older sister, Asha. Whoops. Quick inventory suggests he said and done some highly inappropriate things in the last couple of hours. Asha is amused, Theon isn't. Later, he dresses plainly for the feast. One thing he has learned since being back on the Iron Islands, he arrives to find that he's been left a chair that's two seats from his father, with Asha having the seat of honor. He accuses her of lying, and she says that the axe is her husband, and that the knife she holsters between her breasts is her suckling babe. The whole place is laughing thunderously at Theon.
Theon reckons that they should follow him because he's their prince. Asha points out that they don't follow the rules of the mainland, and that he'd better demonstrate why people should follow and potentially die for him. Balon leaves the feast and gathers his family in his rooms. He tells Theon that Theon will lead 8 boats to harry the stony shore. He'll be accompanied by Aeron and Dagmer, master of arms for House Greyjoy. Asher, on the other hand, will command 30 ships and take Deepwood Mart. Victarion has the most important role. He'll sail upriver and take Moat Cailin, cutting off Robb Stark's army from the rest of the north. Theon is beginning to see where he lies in the pecking order.
Yeah, that Theon, he put more than just his foot in his mouth, that's for sure.
Yeah. So it's another, it's only 2 Theon chapters, and we're, 24 chapters in, but they've both been pretty sizable, so we're spending quite a bit of time with
him. Sure have.
So it starts with him down at the docks, and he's admiring the ship that's going to be known as the Sea Bitch. It's 100 foot long, it has a ramming weapon shaped like an arrowhead, has a single mast and 50 oars and room on deck for 100 men. That is a pretty big ship. I mean, that's the one thing. I would say with all these slights he's receiving, he might want to say, you know, hey, they're giving me a big ship.
Right. He mentions it's not quite as big as his father's, which is called the Great Kraken. But yeah, that's a big ship. And he didn't even have to do anything to earn it. It's not like he had to start with a little dinghy and work his way up, you know.
Exactly. This doesn't feel like he's paid the iron price to me.
Right. He has not.
I'm imagining sort of like a sulky child on their birthday who's just opened their presents, you know. Okay, Theon, it isn't the seat of power you wanted for your birthday, but it is a nice pony, so stop sulking.
You're right, yeah. Yeah, he says, so he and Escrid, who turns out to be Asha, but we'll call her Escrid for now because that's where she is in the story.
Yes, and of course, when we get to the comparison with the TV show, we'll have to throw in another name for her.
Right.
She's also known as Yara. So.
She is a woman of many names.
Yes.
So he mentions that it's been a while since he's sailed a ship, and then he thinks in his head he's never actually captained a ship, but then he says that he's a Greyjoy, so the sea is in his blood. Escrid says, your blood's going to be in the sea if you sail like you talk.
Yeah. I mean, I get the idea of the sea being in your blood, but I mean, commanding a ship is a learned skill. It's not innate, you know.
Yeah, so he just thinks it's going to come naturally to him, but she's basically saying, yeah, that's a good way to get yourself and your men killed. You got to take the sea seriously.
Yeah. Eskrid is really cool. Her verbal sparring with Theon obviously is exactly what he's looking for in a woman. He compares her very favourably to the insipid captain's daughter in the previous chapter, who actually makes a brief appearance in this chapter.
She does, yeah.
And sort of invites him aboard and he ghosts her.
Yes. He Westerosi style ghosts her. Yeah. Yeah, the Miraham is still in port, and it's because Balon, his father, won't let the merchant ships leave that have come into port because he doesn't want word getting out that he's calling his captains or calling his banners, how they would say it in the Greenlands. But Theon mentions that some women crew longships along with the men, and so her tough exterior isn't all that unusual on the Iron Islands. He's enjoying it because he's been around those Greenland prisses for the past 10 years. So this is exciting for him, but apparently it's not all that unusual here on the Iron Islands.
Yeah.
So she guesses that this captain's daughter was soft and bland, and Theon thinks, yes, that's exactly right. She's soft and bland. And then he thinks in his head, how did she know that? And he mentions about these women that crew the longships that they often take on a man's appetite. So maybe, you know, if we obviously know now that who she is, that she does not just crew a longship, she captains a longship. So, you know, maybe she's taken on a man's appetite to look and could see her from a man's perspective or something here.
I will also say that she probably, given the way she was interacting with Theon, and Theon's obvious interest in her based on the way she was acting, the fact that he was ghosting Miraham's captain's daughter probably just meant that I bet that girl is the exact opposite of me, or at least the me that I'm acting right now.
Yes, yes, yeah. Right.
And so it was just probably a fairly safe hunch, you know, like.
Right. Because the captain's daughter was, you know, being very, like, please, my lord, if it pleases my lord, just a moment, my lord, which is
right.
Very different from how Eskrid here is interacting with him. But, you know, the first time you go through this chapter, if you don't know already that Eskrid is actually Asha, there's a few clues that you might overlook unless you go back and read it again. Right in the very third paragraph of the entire chapter, he mentions that Eskrid's nose is too big and sharp, and later when he and Eskrid are riding to Pike, he mentions that his sister has a nose like a vulture's beak, and he also mentions that this woman is a few years older than him.
Uh-huh.
And we know that
so
Asha
right
is
age,
his
yeah.
older sister, yep. And, you know, then we get the respectful bows from the townsfolk, which Theon thinks is for him, so, you know. She's someone of noble birth, if you know what you're looking for. And then, of course, his squire Wex's eyes go round when she sees Eskrid, when he sees Eskrid, rather. And Theon just thinks, what, he's never seen a girl before?
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. Of course, we're not mentioning the fact that Wex doesn't have a tongue, right? So he can't say anything about it. So his eyes going wide. So Wex presumably did know who it was, but all of this you could put to. I would imagine that Sigrin, the shipbuilder, is one of the most important people in the Iron Islands, or at least on Pike.
Yes.
And so the wife of that person might be held in high esteem and might get deferential nods. And certainly, when they're in the company of Theon Greyjoy, heir apparent to the Iron Islands, they might get respectful nods as a couple. You know.
Yes. And that's how she explains it as well.
I can see how he misses it. Yeah, I can see how he misses it.
Yes, yes, definitely. But if you're rereading the chapter, there are some subtle clues thrown in there. He also keeps wondering about the match of Sigrun and Eskrid. And he's like, it just doesn't add up. Sigrun is fat and balding and pimpled, and she's beautiful.
He is the shipbuilder. You know, he has got this prestigious job that can attract ladies.
Yes, yes.
But actually, it does kind of not make much sense because in actual fact, the sort of lady who it would attract is one, not to generalize or be sexist here, but you can imagine that a typical wife for the wealthy shipbuilder of Pike would be a stay-at-home mom who liked the finer things in life, not necessarily warrior woman.
Right. She definitely, it seems like she's used to being out on longships even before we know that she's actually Asha Greyjoy. Right. So yeah, I see what you're saying there. Yeah.
So all the way through this chapter, actually, Asha Esgrid gives Theon rock solid advice. If he would listen to any of the things that she's saying, he could become a much better heir to the throne. In fact, in some ways, I think there's hints in this chapter that Asha herself wants the throne. She claims it for us. She thinks that she should be next in line. So it's kind of good of her to give him good advice. She could say, you're absolutely right. You are the heir. You should just tell everyone that you're the heir. And yes. I would avoid the fighting if I were you and stay home.
You should put on some, just go down fancy and buy some fancy jewelry.
Exactly. Pay the gold price.
You're Theon Greyjoy. You don't need to pay the iron price. Yeah, exactly. You're right. She does several times go out of her way to be to try and help him.
Right. She says you can't presume people's loyalty. You have to win it and earn it. That's how you get their loyalty.
Yeah, some of the other advice she gives him is to choose oarsmen who have rowed together in the past, not just strong arms. He thinks he just wants there's a lot of strong arms in Lordsport, I believe is what he says. And of course, he's too full of himself and doesn't respect her enough to listen to what she's saying. He just thinks, let her think that I want her counsel, women like that. So not even really interested in what she's saying, just pretending to be interested in what she's saying in order to try and impress her.
Yeah.
We'll be right back.
Hello, friends. Are you ready to make some unforgettable memories? Well, if so, consider the Marriott Bonvoy program. Discover the perfect destination for your summer getaway and unlock exclusive deals on luxurious accommodations. With our affiliate partnership, you'll enjoy unbeatable savings and a seamless booking experience. Don't let summer slip away. Visit Marriott Bonvoy today and make this vacation season one for the books. Use our Ghosts of Harrenhal affiliate page to check it all out and buy Bonvoy points or give some as a gift. The link to our page is in the show notes.
And understandably, he wants men that are loyal to him, not to his father, not to his uncles, and that makes a certain amount of sense. But again, how are you going to find those people? I mean, nobody knows you.
Right. Yeah, so
you can find people who are not actively loyal to his father and his uncles, but that doesn't mean that they're going to be loyal to you.
Yes, exactly. He's in a bit of a tough spot if he's looking for people who are specifically loyal to him, because he's shown in this chapter he has absolutely no interest in the drowned god. He has made no attempt to get to know people. And unless he spent time during his 10 years with the Starks in White Harbor, he knows nothing about sailing. So I'm not sure how he expects to find anyone willing to back him over the proven leaders and known Ironborn.
Right, and the other thing is, if you think about this, the banners are being called. Everybody who knows how to sail a ship is being requisitioned to sail ships.
Oh, good point, yeah.
They're already accounted for. He'll be lucky to find strong arms, never mind experienced rowers.
Yeah, good point.
At this point.
Yeah, what I was saying about the him showing no interest in the drowned god, there's multiple examples of it. Right off the bat, he says, on the morrow, my uncle Aaron will pour some seawater over her prow and mumble a prayer to the drowned god. And then he follows it up with, bugger the drowned god. If he troubles us, I'll drown him again.
Yeah, and I think he also says that Aaron lives only for his god. He says, he doesn't say our god or god. He says his god, further distancing himself. And so,
and that's not lost on Asha either. She says, his god, not yours. And he goes, yeah, mine as well, of course. Yeah. And then he says, if I make pious noises as required, damp hair will give me no trouble. So he's basically just expecting to go through the motions of being pious and hoping that'll be sufficient.
Yeah, he He missed it. I really think he misses a trick here when he when they're walking through Lordsport and they're seeing sort of men drinking and she's pointing out who the good ones are and who the bad ones are. He should have sat down with these guys and got to know them.
Sure.
With Eskred as an introduction, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But
probably would have blown her cover story. And but it would have,
coincidentally, you know? It would have blown her cover story.
At that point, he hasn't done too many really inappropriate things or said too many really dangerous things to let on about.
The doing of the inappropriate things was mostly on her end at this point. She's yes. the one who has led him into a state of desire for her.
Yes,
with what right. she's been doing. We've sort of PG'd over some of that.
We did, yes. Yeah. Yes, we definitely PG'd over that. I don't know if you want to go back and,
no,
and mention it.
No, I mean, she touches him in a way that leaves no doubt that she's interested in him.
Multiple
and in
times.
A way that his sister really ought not to.
Yes, that's a good way of putting it, yes. Yeah, so he even admits that he doesn't know the people. He's been gone too long, and he says, I don't know one man from the other. And he looks about town for someone that he knew back when he was 9 or younger, and there's nobody around, of course. In fact, he wanted to offer a spot on his ship to a particular man. I think his name was Bluetooth or something like that.
Yeah.
But turns out that man actually has his own ship, and Asha says, yeah, if you offer him a spot on your ship, you're going to offend him.
Yes. Yeah, so he's just got to understand the people better. He's got to get to know them, understand them, respect their customs. Yeah, he's being clueless. He's being everything that Kat feared he would be. He's being literally everything that Kat feared he'd be, because one of the things that Kat feared he would be is treacherous.
And yes. Kat was quite prophetic here.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's also a little bit humorous when he and Eskrid are walking around town. That we mentioned this a little bit earlier, but the townsfolk and the oarsmen grow quiet and respectful and bow their heads as they walk past. And of course, Theon thinks it's for him, but yeah. He thinks they finally learned who I am. They're finally showing me the respect I deserve. But of course, it's for her.
Yeah. So she tries to keep up the ruse by saying that she's popular as the shipwright's wife, but she tells him later that he should have seen through all this, because if he'd known the first thing about Sigrid, she wouldn't have been able to fool him.
Right.
Just another example of how he's detached from what he's trying to rule.
Yeah.
Or trying to positioning himself into being the ruler of, you know.
Right.
Because a lot of this is like Balon's gonna die. Balon doesn't seem that old and frail.
Yeah, yeah. And Theon mentions when she says, you know, your uncle Euron would be a stranger, we wouldn't put him on the Iron Throne, on the Seastone chair. And he thinks, well, I'm a stranger, but my father's not dead yet. I got plenty of time to prove myself.
Did you think that she said that, meaning it? Did you think that a 2-year trip puts you down the pecking order? I think she just meant, Theon, you're a stranger.
Yes, that's why she said it. I'm sure that's why she said it. You know, he comes and goes a lot, Euron. So they might consider him too much of a stranger when he's got Victarion and Asha to contend with, and theoretically Theon as well, I guess.
Yeah.
But, you know, after that deflating meeting with his father in that first chapter, the guy is undeterred. He's certainly got eternal optimism. Also an enormously inflated ego, but he just can't allow himself to see that the true situation that he's in here. And he just assumes that his hereditary will eventually prevail and he'll become the king. So he's acting and behaving as if he's already the anointed heir apparent.
The thing is, I think on many levels, he's right. I mean, ultimately, if Balon were to die in a way that he could set his affairs straight before he died, he might give it to Theon. Maybe not today, but maybe in a couple of years' time. And so, exactly, I think ultimately, Balon will want to give it to Theon. But Theon has to prove himself. He has to prove himself to every single person in the Iron Islands because he is an outsider. He's an outsider with different customs, and it's astonishing to me that he can't see it, that he can't see that he can't just, bluster his way through this.
Yeah.
Because like you say, sailing is tricky.
And right.
takes command and screws it up. He's not going to have the respect of even the people he knows.
Yep, absolutely.
The one group of people who are actually going to know him.
I think there's an inkling in the back of his head because he sometimes admits to himself in this chapter that he is an outsider. He is a stranger and he's never captained a ship before. And, you know, but he doesn't say these things outwardly. He is 100%. I'm the king. He tells her early in this chapter, he calls himself a king. He says, you know, if you come be romantic with me, someday you'll be able to tell your children's children you once loved a king. And, you know, okay, that one's not so bad. But then later, they're discussing the uncles. Oh, no, they're discussing the feast. They're discussing the feast that they're riding to. And he mentions that he'll come sit with Esgrid when his father leaves the hall because his father's getting old. He doesn't have a stomach for wine anymore. And she says, it's sad when a great man gets old. And his response, which is, I'm sure, one of the things he's replaying in his head over and over again after the fact, is Balon is but the father of a great man. So rather disrespectful to their father there.
Yeah. And he also inadvertently told his sister that she was going to get shipped off to the Silent Sisters when he was in charge, which also probably didn't sit too well.
That was after the fact.
Oh, that's right. That's right. To her, yes, accidentally he told her he was going to marry her off. Yeah, he told her to her face he was going to. That's right.
Yes. When they're sparring, sparring at the feast later, he says, you know what? Marriage is too good for you. I'm going to ship you off to the Silent Sisters when I rule.
We'll be right back.
This episode is sponsored by Audible. To get a free audiobook, or two if you're an Amazon Prime member, go to our exclusive URL, audibletrial.com/ghostsharrenhal. You can find the link in our show notes.
So we meet Smiler. That's Theon's new horse. He's large and angry. Theon named him Smiler because he'd been told that he often smiled at the wrong things. And that's something that we've often heard about Theon. Kat multiple times mentioned that his constant smiling was unnerving, like he was in on a secret that you're not in on.
Right. And, yes. So. Throughout this story, that's like the one characteristic that stayed true about Theon is his smiling. And I was looking on the internet discussion boards, and someone had an interesting take on that. They suggested that he has something called reaction formation, which is a defense mechanism for when emotions or impulses are anxiety-producing, they cause an opposite reaction in the person.
I know that kind of thing.
I suffer a bit from that.
You do? Do you laugh when people get hurt?
Yes, or at least when I'm telling someone bad news, I often tend to smile or have to suppress. Like, I remember when I was younger, one of our pets died, and I was telling one of my siblings, and they're like, are you serious or not? I can't tell because you're smiling. And I'm like, no, I'm serious. So
that's very interesting. My I always remember my little sister as a child, whenever she hurt one of us, because we're kids, you're rough and tumble type things, she would always burst out laughing when she hurt one of us. And that would, of course, then drive them crazy. And then sort of like real fisticuffs would ensue.
Right. You think that's funny?
Yeah, exactly. But it was, I think it was like that. I think it was just a sort of like spontaneous reaction to the sort of anxiety of the moment, you know?
Yeah.
I didn't mean to hurt you.
My younger sister has that issue as well. But and actually I was looking at some of the examples, and actually some of the examples were provided in the chats that I were reading. And when Garrod was beheaded and his head rolled to Theon, and Theon laughed and kicked it away. You know, some of the talk was that, you know, Theon's a ward, and he is kept as a safeguard for the Greyjoys to behave themselves. And if, theoretically, if the Greyjoys didn't, Theon might end up with the same fate. And so, you know, he might be laughing and smiling, but at the same time in the back of his head, remembering that could almost as easily be me if things go wrong.
Yeah.
And another one, when Rob is giving the kind of the decrees of the hostages that he wants from the Lannisters, and he's giving these this to Cleos Frey, Kat looks at Theon, and Theon's smiling, and she wondered what that meant. But, you know, Theon has also been a hostage his, you know, for the whole second half of his life here. So, you know, there might be some of that going through his head as well there.
Yeah.
And then finally, one that I thought of was when he kills Stiv to save Bran's life back in the Wolfswood.
When they capture Osha, yeah.
Yeah, yes, exactly. And the wolves tear the rest of the wildlings apart. Joseph is puking at the carnage, and others are pale from it all, but Theon is just standing there smiling. So, yeah. You know, he tends to smile at the wrong times.
I think that interpretation is very good. I'm not sure that that's what George Martin has in mind, though. I think Martin has in mind that he's just a nasty piece of work who enjoys suffering.
Yep. There were people that argued that
yeah.
if you look into the psychology of it, sure, that might make sense, but that's not exactly what the author put that trait in the character for.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, that would actually be a very subtle thing to put in on a character trait. You know, maybe yeah. Theon's actually a misunderstood nice guy, but I have a feeling this book is not that deep, you know.
what are you saying about Martin? Why do you think it takes him a decade to write a book?
That's true. It's like he's still leafing through sort of like psychological textbooks to find out what he should put in. So we go through the uncles.
We should probably get Dr. Honda on again.
Exactly.
And have him do a breakdown of Theon.
Yeah. The uncles, Balon's brothers are Aeron, who's drunk on seawater, basically giving himself over to the religion. Victarion, who's a great bullock, strong and slow. And Euron may be dead. Asher agrees that he might be dead, but says it wouldn't matter because, you know, the Ironborn are not going to put a stranger on the sea stone chair. But as we've said before, I think that's entirely not true applied to Euron. I think Euron is not sufficiently a stranger that they wouldn't put him on the sea stone chair. I think he's saying the one person will not get onto that chair is Theon, because he truly right. is a stranger.
Yeah, and that rattles him a bit, and he does think in his head, 10 years is a long time, but like we were saying a few minutes ago, my father's not dead, I have time to prove myself. Right. But, you know, I was thinking it's not just the 10 years, it's how young he was when he was taken. It's been more than half his life. If he was taken at 9 and he's been gone basically a decade, they never got to know him. If he was 20 when he was taken and he came back at 30, it might be a different situation. He still might have to reintroduce himself, but these people literally do not know this right. man here.
But I'll say that I actually think he's gone at it's the right time, because the thing is, you come back as a new young man with your life ahead of you. You prove yourself, but the thing is, you've only got this, almost uniquely, he has a second chance to make a first impression, because he made an impression on them when he was a child, but then they've all forgotten him, but he's come back with a chance to make a first impression, and he's absolutely blowing it. I mean, and that'll be hard to shake, you know?
Right, you're absolutely right, he's absolutely blowing it, and that's a good point, that they didn't know him, he was just a little boy, so...
Right. Right.
But now, of course, if he had spent 20 years as a reaving, you know,
right.
Ironborn...
If he'd spent 20 years, but at the age of 20, he wouldn't have spent 20 years doing that.
Oh, yes, true.
He would only spend a small... He's right. at peak reaving age now, so he can right. still do it, is what I'm saying. Yeah.
Yes, maybe only like three, maybe 4 years.
Right. Yeah, he's a little bit behind the curve, but he can catch up, yeah.
Yes,
especially
I see what
you're given
saying.
That he's being gifted... a fantastic 150-man crew ship.
Right? He just has to figure out how to sail it and captain it.
Definitely hire good men.
He's a Greyjoy. The sea's in his blood. He'll figure it out, certainly, when he steps on the prow. But, you know, one of the things that Asha brings up is that his mother is on Harla, which is another island. They're on Pike, and Harla's about a day away by sail, and she thinks surely she'd love to see her son. And Theon says, I'm too busy. My father relies upon me, which I'm not quite sure the legitimacy of that statement.
He needs someone to kick.
Yeah. But, you know, knowing that she's Asha and the lack of concern he shows for their ailing mother, I was thinking this might have been one of the final nails in the coffin for a chance of her respecting him.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, obviously the mum would want to see her son for the first time in a decade, and if he's too busy being a peacock on Pike, he's benefiting no one and denying her a pleasure in life that she shouldn't be doing.
And, you know, she refers to him as being too busy princing about, which she says later to him, but that's what he's been doing. He's basically been planning his coronation. And instead of taking a couple days to go visit his mother he hasn't seen in a decade.
So after Eskred becomes Asha, Theon asks why she would do it. And she says, not without some merit, I wanted to see who you were first. And I did.
Yes, she did.
I feel bad for him. I really do. Because, and to a certain extent, She entrapped him a little bit, you know, sort of
she
like
did.
Her, what she did early on was certainly designed to make him in a fluster.
Yes, but touching him the way and in the place that she touched him would certainly make you think this isn't my sister.
Yes.
I wondered if maybe at first she was just messing with him because she's behind him when the chapter starts, and if she was just messing with him, calling him a lordling or a young lord or something like that, and expected him to turn, see her and recognize her, but he didn't recognize her when he turned to talk to her and immediately began to hit on her and said some quite inappropriate things right off the bat. And so she thought, oh, okay, let's just see what kind of man we got here.
Right, yeah. Upon reflection, when he's in his room alone, he realizes he's made an appalling fool of himself. But then, not too surprisingly, he blames her for it. But he has to recognize that all she did was provide the rope. He swung it over the branch of the tree and put the noose around his neck.
Yes, that's exactly how that went down.
Yeah.
So then he comes down to dinner and he is late, and Asha has already taken the seat of honor at their father's right hand, so he has to sit in the seat two down from their father. But I was thinking he must have sat in that seat for previous feasts, because he tells her, my father's having a feast, you should come with me to Pike. But he thinks in his head he's been doing this every night, waiting for all his captains to arrive, but he doesn't tell her that. So these feasts have been going on, and he says to her, you're in my place. So he must have been sitting at his father's right hand up to this point. And either Balon doesn't care which kid sits in the place of honor, prefers that his daughter sits in that seat, or wanted to see how Theon was going to react to it.
Yeah. Or he gives the seat of honor to the person he thinks, the person in the room who deserves the most honor. And to this point, it had been Theon. But now that Asha is here, it's no longer Theon.
Sure, yeah. And he whispers in Asha's ear, you're in my place. And she goes, oh, you must be mistaken, brother. Your place is in Winterfell. on their ride from Lordsport to Pike, she prodded him to keep talking about his time with Rob, and I wondered if maybe he talked a little too glowingly about that time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she's well aware that he's got many Greenland ideas and maybe thinks, nope, you are not suited to be an Ironborn. You are suited to be in Winterfell.
Yeah. So as we said in the summary, she reveals that Sigrun's not her husband, the axe is, and there's no baby in her belly, but she has a dagger suckling at her breast that she can...
You would think Theon would have been aware of that if she had that there the whole time with his...
That's why she was batting his hands away. You know? Yes. Leave my dagger alone.
You're gonna cut yourself. Yeah. Back in that last Theon chapter, Balon says to Theon, my daughter has taken an axe for a lover. I'm not going to have my son bedeck himself like a whore. So, this is the second time we've heard that she's taken the axe for a husband.
So then after the feast is over, the planning begins for the Greyjoys getting involved in the war. So Theon will command 8 ships, but not on his own. His uncle Aeryn will be with him, and the Master of Arms from the Greyjoys Master of Arms, whose name has escaped me briefly.
Dagmar Clefjaw.
Yes. They will harry the Stony Shore, which is the east coast of the north. It's not very populous. It comprises mainly smaller fishing villages. Harrying it, to me, seems like a pretty pointless exercise. Apart from the fact they're probably not very well defended. You're not really going to gain much from doing so.
No.
I guess it's the same tactic that the Lannisters are employing in the Riverlands. Harry the small towns, spread the forces that are arrayed against you thinner to protect them all.
Yeah, I think that's what they're doing. They're hoping to draw some people, some lords out of their castles to tend to this little skirmish and catch them off guard.
Asher will command 30 ships to take Deepwood Mott, which is the biggest port town on the east coast of the north. It's not terribly far from far northwest of Winterfell, so it's that one is somewhere that the Winterfell could try to defend if they wanted to, because it's probably a couple of days' ride from Winterfell.
Right. Yeah, Theon's feeling disrespected at his assigned, what he refers to as, Reaver's work. But like we've been talking about, he's never captained a ship before. He probably hasn't even sailed, aside from getting to the Iron Islands here. He probably hasn't even sailed in a ship since he was 9.
Yes, so yes.
You'd think he might be happy to start small and earn his way up, but...
Right, yes. Some hapless villagers are probably who you should be attacking at this point, not a naval battle or taking a big town. Yeah.
He should be given a rowboat and say, just try and keep up. I was wondering if maybe he's become accustomed to being given important roles by Rob. You know, Bran even described in multiple chapters that Rob was often in meetings with Maester Luwin and Theon and some of the other respected people. So, you know, Theon's been involved in all of Rob's plans, and he's been given important jobs, like he rode with Brendan Blackfish Tully to go scout the Green Fork River before they went to the Twins. And he was given this mission, which is obviously an incredibly important mission if it were carried out successfully. So, you know, he maybe is accustomed to getting these important roles here.
Yeah. But again, he's not even trusted with this. The Dagmar and Aeryn will be along with him. So hopefully he won't mess this up. But it will be very hard for him to sort of like build a reputation on this trip for sure.
And Asha, she wants a castle. And so she's going to take Deepwood Mott for herself. And I thought, she better bring her own grain. Because one thing we know about the Glovers is they didn't keep it up. They haven't been putting much grain aside.
Especially if they're about to lose Deepwood Mott.
Right.
Let's hope their granaries are somewhere else. But the main fight will be for Moat Cailin. Their uncle Victarion will lead the brunt of their forces up the Salt Spear and then up the Fever River. And at the source of the Fever River, it's just a short trip over to Moat Cailin from there. So that's how they're planning to attack Moat Cailin. We have talked before about the strategic importance of Moat Cailin. Control of it effectively controls all traffic to and from the north.
The problem is it's only defensible from the... It's impenetrable from the south. If you come from the north, east, or west, I guess not so much.
So a sufficiently strong naval force can pass around and then take you unawares, and that's the hope here, I guess, for the Greyjoys. It's a solid plan. I mean, it does feel like you're taking There's no easy choices here for the Greyjoys. I mean, because if they tried to take Lannisport and Casterly Rock, they would face severe battles to win those. But they're going to have to fight hard to win Deepwood Mott and Moat Cailin here, and therefore the North, and they're going to have to fight hard to hold the North against the Starks.
Yeah, I've got some pedantry on that when we get there.
All right, well, I won't talk any more about that then. But Theon plays the dutiful son. He doesn't sort of like bridle at this plan. He doesn't say, no, if you remember, we were talking about Casterly Rock and Lannisport. Those are the places we could attack, and they're full of gold, not snow.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot he can do at this point. Now, he thinks earlier that he's going to play the dutiful son until his father reveals his plans. And he thinks, but if I don't like them or my part in them, well, and I don't think he likes it. I know he doesn't like his part in this, and I don't think he likes his plan at all. So, but what can he do? He's got no men of his own. He's got no power of his own. So
and simultaneously, he needs to abide by the plan in order to prove himself. And so, I don't see what he could do that would be a good move for anybody, including himself at this point, other than just playing along and being a tumbleweed.
Yes, if he is okay with absolutely backstabbing his foster brother and very close friend in the back.
Yeah. But he doesn't do much soul-searching, it seems, about that whole plan. I mean, basically, this whole plan is anti-Stark rather than anti-Lannister, which is what he came to arrange. So he does appear to be more interested in his own status in the Iron Islands than he is in loyalty to his foster family. And I can kind of understand it, but... But yeah, he swallows down his complaints. I mean, he sort of chokes a few things out, but he basically... doesn't really put up a fight here.
Yeah, you know, even that thought, though, it's just like, you know, he was sent here to be Rob's envoy, negotiating an alliance, and he's thinking, I should be the one to take that northern castle. You know, I'm the one that knows. I've been there with the Starks.
Yeah. But of course, the more senior his role, the more able he would be to pivot if he wants to change this plan.
Well,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess that's one argument he can make to Rob after the fact.
Right. I only half-heartedly reave some of the villages. Well, Moat Cailin and Deepwood Mott fell.
Yeah, he's not only is he not carrying out the plan he agreed to come carry out for Rob. He is literally attacking Rob's homeland. So, you know, it's definitely a stab in the back to the Starks. And it's, like you said earlier, it's exactly what Kat was afraid of. Yeah. But then Balon says, when my sons have struck their blows to Victarion, he's telling him, you know, what his part is going to be. He says, when my sons have struck their blows, I thought that was an odd...
Because the three people who are striking blows, one of them is his brother, one's his daughter, and one's his son.
Yes.
So, yes.
When my sons...
right.
So he just must have gotten swept up and forgot that Asha is actually a female.
Yes. This all does beg the question to me of Balon's aspirations. I mean, Theon's plan was that the Ironborn would invade the West, keep the richest area of the entire of mainland Westeros for themselves. Farmlands, mineral wealth, major coastal towns. Perfect for the Iron Islanders. Instead, it just appears that he's hell-bent on revenge on the Starks. They're going to take these crappy, desolate northern targets, which are certainly ripe for the taking. I think they're going to win these battles. You know, I don't think these places are sufficiently well-defended to survive. Maybe Moat Cailin.
Concern.
Maybe Moat Cailin will be. That will be a tricky one. But I think the Reaving's going to work, and I think Deepwood Mott will probably fall too.
Sure, I agree. Yeah. I think you're absolutely right that he is passing up the better deal to get revenge on the Starks.
Yeah.
And he said last chapter, he's not going to pay the gold price for his independence by helping Rob and defeating his enemies for him. He's going to pay the iron price and take it himself, which apparently
means the
North. You know
what, though? There's an iron price to be paid to take Lannisport and Casterly Rock. They're not going to fall easily. So.
Absolutely.
So he's just accepting way less illustrious and valuable things, prizes, because of his bitterness, it seems to me.
Unless we're unaware of the fact that maybe he's been approached by the Lannisters.
Right. That's a good point.
I mean, Lannisport is a short trip up the Sunset Sea.
Right.
But there's also bad blood between the Lannisters and the Greyjoys from the Greyjoy Rebellion. So well, it's not like they're
there's
buddies.
Bad blood between the Greyjoys and everyone from the Greyjoy Rebellion.
Pretty much, yes.
Yeah. All right. Do you have some background?
Sure. So Theon thinks that the Seastone chair should be handed down hereditarily, like on the mainland Westeros. And Asha says it doesn't work that way on the Iron Islands. But both thoughts actually have precedence in the Iron Islands past. So back in the first Theon chapter, Theon and Baelon both referenced a man named Euron Redhand. Baelon actually said what I just said a few minutes ago. He's going to pay the iron price and take the crown like Euron Redhand did. So who's Euron Redhand? Well, King Euron Redhand was actually Euron Grey Iron, known as Euron of Orcmont. He lived about 5,000 years ago, and he's best known for being the first king of the Iron Islands to make the throne hereditary. Before Euron Redhand, each of the Iron Islands were ruled by a Rock King and a Salt King. The Rock King ruled the land, and the Salt King commanded the island's longships. They were chosen by the island's captains in a king's moot. Eventually, all the petty kings and captains from the various islands came together for a king's moot and appointed a High King of the Iron Islands. Now, back to Euron Grey Iron, or Euron Redhand. He was the Salt King of Orcmont during the rule of his great-uncle, High King Euragon IV, Grey Iron. Euragon wished for Euron to succeed him, but the priests of the Drowned God were determined not to lose the power of kingmaking and planned to decide Euragon's successor through a king's moot. Euron had other plans, however, and he and his axemen descended upon the king's moot after his great-uncle Euragon's death. They killed all the captains, the 13 Salt Kings and Rock Kings, and about 50 priests and prophets. Euron then made the High Kingship hereditary and called himself King of the Iron Islands. And during Euron's 22-year reign, the rulers of the various islands were reduced to lords, and several ancient lines that refused to bend the knee were extinguished.
So that's how it is today? I mean, at this point in time, that it is hereditary. I mean, it all things being equal, Asher or Theon would inherit.
It's been passed down through the family since that.
Right.
Now, Theon says it's not that unusual for an uncle, an ambitious uncle, to kill a nephew and, you know, take the Seastone chair for himself.
Right. Okay.
But primarily, it's hereditary now.
Yeah. So much of the first, comparison with the television show, much of the first half of this chapter was rolled into Theon's previous scene on the television show on Pike. His first ride from Lordsport to Pike was with Yara, Asha, not Damphair. His uncle was cut out of this scene. So I did mention this last time, so apologies for the slight spoiler, because that where he fondled his sister on the ride was in the previous scene. One thing that's slightly different is, in the TV show, Baelon is almost always portrayed as alone in his tower. He's the idea of him feasting. Having watched the TV show more recently than I read the book, the idea of Baelon feasting just seems strange to me, but I guess it was just the way he was portrayed in the TV show. He seemed to be alone, aloof, and brooding on his past slights. So, but the plan that he delivers here was very similar. The plan of invading the North was pretty much verbatim. The only thing is, I think Theon only was given the one ship. He wasn't given a ship. He was given one existing ship to command, not eight ships. So he was even more slighted in the TV show.
Yes. And he was given a rowboat, like I suggested.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And the emphasis was really on what Asha Yara was given rather than his uncle. It was more sort of like the contrast was just between what Theon and his sister were getting.
Okay. So she did get her 30 ships, but he didn't get his eight.
Yes, exactly. But he also didn't get nursemaided. No one's going with him. It's him.
Okay.
It's him and his crew. So he will be in charge, nominally at least.
Right.
Just so you had, you claimed to have some pedantry. Why don't you hit me with that?
So my, this isn't just my pedantry. I've seen plenty discussions about this on the internet over the years. But what do they plan to do with the North if they're successful? They can't really expect to hold it long term. I mean, even if Rob fails, the Iron Island is too sparse to hold against the Iron Throne. I mean, it's the North is nearly half the size of the other six kingdoms combined, and there's just not enough people in the Iron Islands to hold that much land. Based on semi-canon info, there's about 20, they can muster about 20,000 to send off to war. That's not going to be able to hold that much land. And
yeah, I mean, I guess you have to make them vassal lords. They, you know, you have to, they have to bend the knee and sort of give you a tithe of their crops and what have you. But I hear what you're saying. I mean, it just feels like,
yeah,
unless you want to move in, unless you don't like the Iron Islands, they don't sound that great, to be honest.
You know? maybe that's their plan. They're going to abandon the Iron Islands entirely. But even then, okay, say Rob gets defeated. Whoever takes over the Iron Throne is going to want that kingdom back from the Greyjoys, and they're going to be able to muster a lot more than what the Iron Islands can, and they're going to be spread out. The North is so big. That's their biggest defense, is there's so much land. Okay, you even siege Winterfell, which Balon says Winterfell might hold out for a year. So you besiege Winterfell. You've got that whole east coast with White Harbor, which is an actual city, and, you know, the Umbers and all the other houses on that east coast. That would be days' ride just to get to them. You're going to be spreading yourself so thin.
But then maybe it becomes a campaign not dissimilar to the TV show you like, The Last Kingdom, where the Danes have invaded Britain, but they don't hold all of it. They hold parts of it, and there's constant sort of to-ing and fro-ing of which bits you own, which bits they own. But the problem with that comparison, of course, is that the North is very unified.
Right. Britain
in the Last Kingdom was not unified enough to have a unified front against the Danes. The Danes were able to make sort of like individual pacts with various forces, and that allowed them to stay for years and years, slowly increasing their strength. The Iron Islanders aren't going to be able to do that. The only way that you can make a Northman bend the knee to you is through duress. You couldn't possibly. No one's going to say, oh, thank goodness you're here. The Starks are awful.
Right.
Hooray for the Greyjoys. Our valiant salvation.
Yep. A sword to the throat, I guess, might do it, but it's only going to be short term. As soon as other reinforcements arrive, the Northmen are going to turn their turn on you. But Balon, he says Winterfell might hold out for a year, but by then they could be in the middle of a northern winter. And
right. It's like it'd be the Battle of St. Petersburg. I mean, this is going to
be like, that's where it's going with this. It sounds a lot like a land assault on Russia in the winter, which is pretty much known to be a bad idea.
Right. Dig a trench to freeze to death in. Great. Thanks.
Right. Yeah. So, I don't know.
But again, maybe not pedantry, maybe just poor choices by the characters, you know?
Yes. It's not necessarily pedantry. It's just, I don't get it. I don't get what their long-term goal is. It's almost like what Davos was saying about how, yeah, we could take King's Landing, but we can't hold King's Landing. We don't have the men.
No.
So I think Balon is like, I can take the North, and not thinking about, how am I going to hold the North?
Yeah. So news and notes. Now, I'll start news and notes by saying that when we were talking before about what's happened this week, the only thing I wanted to talk about was what we're about to talk about in news and notes, because it was easily the best thing that's happened to me this week.
Why don't you tell them what's happened?
So we have a listener whose name is Jenny, and Jenny sent us a package, and it went to McKelly's, and he opened it while we were having a Zoom call. And this package, when it was unwrapped, was a painting that Jenny had painted herself. And the painting was a depiction of us, of McKelly and Simon, outside. It was actually a painting of Molestown, just south of the wall. And Simon and McKelly were sitting outside their new store, their haberdashery, selling brown clothes in Molestown. It is fantastic. It is so great. And it was just such a thrill. I had no idea what it was going to be when you were opening it. And when I saw it, I have showed it to everybody I've talked to since then. I was like, look at this.
Yeah, I had it sitting in the kitchen, and both kids independently came through and asked what it was, and were so impressed that someone thought enough about our little show to paint us such a fantastic painting. And my favorite part about the whole thing is that both men in the picture have hair. So we've been debating on who is who in this picture here, and we're pretty sure the one sitting is you because it looks like curlier hair. And I'll take any hair, so I'll take the other guy with the straighter hair. Even came with a little story.
You
remember? I read it to you about how it's a slow day at our brown cloak haberdashery, and we had just finished a game of Sivas, and of course you had won because games are your thing.
Let's be clear.
And that was very, very cool.
Jenny, thank you. Thank you so much. It's made my day.
Yes, thank you. I've thanked you already, but I'll thank you again. Thank you so much. And
we'll share an image of it on social media so people can see. Yeah,
we'll do more than that.
Okay,
we recorded the unboxing, the unveiling of the painting. So I will put that on the YouTube channel.
All right.
So if you want to watch our reactions, you can go to the YouTube channel and watch it unfold.
No faking. We were very excited. Right. So a review. So we got a review from Slayam. I'm not sure how to say that, but
S-L-L-A-Y-M. I believe I got this from podchaser.com.
Okay. And he said, fantastic and fun to follow along while reading A Song of Ice and Fire for the first time. Definitely helped me not to miss any important details while reading. So thank you very much. Hope you're still enjoying it. Let's wrap this one up. In conclusion, Theon might really want to think about his loyalty. Nobody here seems to care for him at all.
Nope.
And if he could find a way to turn the tables in some way, he would have Rob's gratitude forever. For instance, Balon gets beheaded and Theon gets what he wants, the Iron Islands, as his own. He clearly wants wealth and power, specifically to succeed his father. And for me, there's two possible routes to doing that. Become the heir by becoming a true Iron Islander. You're going to have to subjugate yourself, admit you're not worthy, start from the bottom, work your way into people's admirations. Yeah,
exactly.
Or betray them, turn the tables, deliver what you can to Rob, inherit when Rob wins the war.
Right.
You'll struggle forever to have the loyalty, but you can argue that you paid the iron price. I mean, that's what I would argue.
And we know from last chapter that Theon actually has his eyes on Casterly Rock.
Right.
Being the Lord of Casterly Rock. So, you know, could certainly do that. And then don't even have to go back to the Iron Islands if you don't want to.
But of those two plans, one of them is quick, easy, deceitful. And the other one is very long term. It's hard. It's honorable.
I know where you're going with this.
Theon Greyjoy, take the easy route. Be deceitful. And also, you're probably going to be more. I mean, it's hard to know how you turn the tables here because you've been pushed so low. You're in control of one of the 31 ships that are heading to the north. You know.
And that's not even Victorian's.
Right. That
doesn't count his part.
Yeah.
Yes, I think you're absolutely right. I think he's got to make a choice here.
Yeah. Asha seems kind of a bit of a wild child, but definitely a serious rival for the throne. She commands way more respect. She certainly commands more respect with me.
Right. Oh, yes. And I don't think you're alone based on the reaction of the pair walking through Lordsport there. But, you know, he was thinking early on in the chapter, he's playing the dutiful prince, but now Asha knows exactly what he's thinking because he told her everything that he was thinking, and she knows he's really only thinking about himself. Mm-hmm. And that's a great deal of information to hold over him if she desires to do so. Yeah. So, and he knows what he's told her. And we don't know everything that he's told her, but what we do know that he's told her was pretty damning. So there's one part where it says, it basically just says he was surprised at the things he was telling her. They don't, we don't really get the details. So Lord only knows what he was telling her there. But will he try to get something equally as damning on her, or possibly worse? By worse, I mean, would he become a kinslayer?
Mm. Do you think, so going back to the hereditary nature of the throne in the Iron Islands, does Balon get the opportunity to name his successor, or is it Theon by default?
Well, I guess he could, before he dies, name who he wants to be his successor.
Right. But of course, what you're saying is that likely, whoever he chooses, there'll be some internecine fighting and maybe some kinslaying at that point.
Sure, because like Asha says, the Ironborn aren't just going to roll over and accept some stranger. So, you know, Balon can say, I want Theon to be king, and Balon dies, and Theon says, I'm king or lord of the Iron Islands, and they could say, no, you're not, because we're backing Asha, you know.
Right.
Instead of a Dance of the Dragons, they could have a Dance of the Krakens here.
Hey, very good. I like the way you did that.
Asha, she actually taught him a rather valuable, if kind of gross, lesson here.
Yeah.
You know, it might be a whole tough love situation.
Yeah, that's the thing. There's definitely a way of looking at all this, of saying, you actually have a rival, but you have someone who's advising you well, and you should listen to that person, because she clearly cares for you on some levels.
She duped him, no doubt. I mean, no doubt. 100%, no doubt, she duped him. But she also, multiple times, gave him good counsel.
Yeah.
So she wanted to find out who he was. Now she knows.
Kicked his ego a little bit, bringing him back to Earth and perhaps making him realize he's got to start from the bottom here.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. That humbling him might just be what he needs to realize, I've been making a mess of this whole thing. I need to start at the bottom.
Yeah.
So maybe she was ultimately doing him a favor. We'll see. Yeah.
And then you're right about the North. It's sparsely defended, but how are you going to take it? I mean...
its biggest defense is its sheer size. Yeah. You might as well try and take the whole Seven Kingdoms, you know?
Right, yeah.
It's huge. Yeah. And they don't have that many people. It's not like they're the Reach and they can pull together 50,000, 80,000 people, you know? They've got 20. That's not many to take to hold a place that large. So, but I'm really thinking Theon might be having an identity crisis here, because he's not Ironborn. He even thinks multiple times, like, I have nothing here. There's nothing here for me. But on the other hand, he's also not a Stark. But it looks like he's got to choose one or the other.
Yeah. Yep. The Greyjoys treat him horribly, but he is their blood. Rob, on the other hand, seems to trust and value him, but the Starks are his captors, and that's all they were on some levels.
On some level, right. I mean, depends on how he wants to look at it. We don't know how all 10 years have played out, but from what we had seen, they treat him fairly well, it seems.
The one thing about this is they are sending him to the North, so he does have an opportunity to play, to do something other than what he's been ordered to do, if he wanted to.
Yeah.
He could help the Starks rather than fight against them.
Absolutely, he could. He could get a message to Bran.
Right.
So, you know, I was thinking I don't think he has the ability to steal away in the night, because unless he's going to go out on the Miraham, maybe he could get out on that. But he doesn't have any ships to get out to, you know, just run away and get back to Rob and warn him. But when he gets to the North, if he wanted to, there are things he could do to help the Starks.
Well, think about it, Theon. Think about it. I'm going to act as if the book isn't already written. The die is not cast. I'm rooting for you, Theon. Come on, man.
We're also acting as if we don't know what's going to happen. So, you know.
You say acting.
Yes, that's right.
As always, you can reach us at ghost.harrenhall@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at ghostharrenhall. We're on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Discord.
And if you wouldn't mind going out and leaving us a 5-star rate and or a fantastic review, we certainly would appreciate that. And hey, if you do, we just might read it on a future episode.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.